the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about volatility here. Oh, it's just so much fun. It's time for more of the Bucket Strategy Investing Show. We're going to kick off yet another hour, the best in money information. Keep it right here. Professor Rick Plum joins me, Johnny Dean, once again from Lucia Capital Group. And of course, as usual, we got a whole lot of stuff to go over. You, though, are required to take part in the program. Your chance to call in is right now. Take advantage. You got a money strategy question, we're here to answer it for you. The procedure is thus, go to your phone, give us a call at 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You send us your email questions and comments, which we'll get to this hour as well. Head on over to wealthed.com, our website. Click on the Find Your Answer link. Just fill in the blanks. Send it to us. We'll answer it right here on the program. Wealth education. That's what we try to provide right here. And much of what you see and hear on our show can be found at wealthed.com. So you should check it out. You can also contact the Brain Trust off the air, 800-644-1150. You can give them a call. You meet with a Brain Trust advisor. You go over your individual situation. You get your bucket strategy going. You call Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group off the air, 800-644-1150. That's the way you prefer to do it. Although we do take questions on the air, and we're going to do that right now. 877-PLANNER is our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. And coming up in a bit, I'm going to run a few more of these ways. We talked last hour, if you happen to hear it, ways to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio. In other words, sort of mitigate the risk of inflation. And I got this article off Reuters, having some fun with it with Professor Plum because he did not agree with the very first one I said. So we'll go over that again and cover a couple more ways. I don't know how you'll feel about the others. We're going to find out.
I've seen them, so.
I know it. I'm going to surprise you with these. 877-PLANNER is our number, however. And let's get back to the phone lines. It is Tom up next this hour in Vancouver with a question or two. Hello, Tom.
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, with the oil prices have been dropping for like 10 years. If you track that ETF that's labeled USO.
Uh-huh.
And my question is not stock advice or whatever, but does that actually track the price of oil? I mean, not dollar for dial, dollar for dollar, but is there like an expiration date if you buy that ETF?
No, it's still...
Are you basically just buying oil?
I believe that particular one is dealing in the commodity of oil, just like GLD is dealing in the commodity of gold. And the design is supposed to track, at least fairly closely, the movement of the oil price, so down or up, depending on what's going on. And it's supposed to be fairly attractive in that particular type of a range. Unlike an ETF that deals with oil companies, where the company could actually have a different type of rate of return depending upon profitability, depending upon other things, than the actual price of oil. So it may be accentuated or less, less than the movement of oil. That particular one, I do believe, I'm not 100% sure, is dealing with the commodity itself and whether or not, but now you have to look at what is it trying to track? Is it, tracking West Texas, sweet or whatever they call it? Is it tracking oil coming on the global market as a conglomeration of all the different types of oil from the Middle East, from the U.S., from Russia, and all those other areas? So it may have a little bit of a difference in the way than you see it. If you're looking at what, Yahoo reports, that may be, one type of oil that has a little bit different movement than the global market itself. So, but if, from what I've heard, it does... Over time, it does a pretty good movement according to oil.
Okay, so that it's not like an expiration date, like some futures or something. You can just buy it, hold on to it for 10 years, and if it goes up, it goes up, right?
That's my understanding, and if it goes down, it goes down.
Yeah. Okay, great. I appreciate that.
Don't forget that down part. It can happen.
No. I understand. I'm not running out and buying it.
Yeah, I've read articles.
Thank you.
I've read articles, Tom. That oil could, not only go into the 20s, but go below 20. I saw one that said 10.
Yeah, see,
oh,
here we go.
Oh, my goodness. I've also seen that it'll be back to 50 by the middle of the year. Well, that's a lot different than dropping to 10. Going up by 60% is a lot different than dropping by 60%.
Yeah, the folly of trying
And they both have good arguments.
Well, and that's the thing. The folly of trying to take data from today and extrapolate it and make it come true in the future. Everybody seems to be looking at the same data. Are they not? Are they not all looking at the same?
They're interpreting it differently.
Well, yeah. So if I look at a player statistics, I can say this guy's going to go to the Hall of Fame, and somebody else is going to say, no, he's going to be out of baseball in 2 years.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Now, of course, we're not talking about baseball. We're talking about money. And when it comes to your money, you're going to be gambling if you start relying on predictions to give you your rate of return.
Now, with Tom's question, I've never actually overlaid a graph of oil prices to a graph of that particular stock. That would be interesting to do, to really see how closely. And if he was interested in it and he wanted to try to buy something that was kind of tracking oil, that would be the exercise I would do. I would go back 5-10 years, and it has been around for more than 10 years, and overlay a graph of oil prices versus an overlay of the graph of that particular stock's prices to see how closely it does, track the price of oil. My understanding is, not being somebody who's ever really tracked that stock, I don't do a lot of tracking of stocks, is that from what I've heard, it does a decent job. It was a lot higher earlier, and it's a lot lower now.
Of course, it's a lot lower now.
Just like oil, it was a lot higher earlier and a lot lower now.
Oh, man, oh, man. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We have some room on the phones now. Finally, if you were trying to get in, you can get in right now. Ask your money question at the Brain Trust, 877-PLANNER. So last hour, I asked you about this, Professor Plum, some ways to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio. Reuters mentioned this. Replacing bonds with tips, no go.
Didn't care for that one.
Treasury inflation, protected securities, you hated it.
Well, not in total. You don't just go cold turkey from 100% of one thing to 100% the other thing.
No, you don't. And that would be a stupid thing to do. So anyway, but they're suggesting this, and this is out there. And there are people who read this and say, okay, I think I'll do this. Probably not a good idea. So a second idea they had was replace bonds with metals. With the same stock... Do that again. There it is. Okay.
With metals.
Yes, they said, with the same stock percentage, you invest 40% in a precious metals fund instead of bonds. Now, what they're telling you is your 10-year return rises to 11.4%, while your 3-year performance drops to nearly 10%. Volatility, however, more than doubles to about 20%.
Now, this is obviously not a retiree.
No.
This can't be a retiree, because if all you have are metals, which don't pay any interest, don't have any cash flow associated with them, and stocks, where the cash flow should be reinvested to get that rate of return they're talking about.
There's no income.
And you have to be selling the asset to get the income that you need to spend in retirement. And with that extra volatility they just talked about, that is a death nail. So this is purely an accumulation play.
Well, as far as you're concerned, I don't know what they mean. They could be talking to retirees before all I know.
Well, I hope they're not.
I hope they're not either, but let's just pretend like they're not.
Stupid. But it's just, this stuff really kind of ticks me off, actually. I mean,
doesn't it, though?
40% in metals. Which metal? Gold? How's gold done over the last 5 years? 10 years? Well, 10 years may be okay. But if you're a retiree and you've waited that long, you've lost a lot in your gold portfolio. Silver, come back around a little bit lately. You want palladium or one of these other exotics or one of these things? If you want...
Iron. I want iron. I'm going to invest in iron from now on.
Metals as an inflation hedge does have a place in a growth portfolio. 40%? No. 5%. Maybe 10%. Because when it does move, like we saw what happened with gold, it moves a lot in a short period of time. Then it sits around and does nothing for a long period of time. You can use a small percentage of it to hedge a lot of other things. You don't have to be overloaded in it by 40% of your portfolio. So let's be a little bit more reasonable with what we're doing. And that is not 40% of your entire portfolio, even if you are a pure growth investor, and it's definitely not 40% of your portfolio, with 60% being the other portion of your portfolio, if you're a retiree that needs an income stream from your portfolio. That is ludicrous.
Well said. Now, when they say your 10-year return rises to 11.4%, they're talking about what you would have done over the last 10 years?
Probably as compared to the bonds.
the bonds that we mentioned before, which right. was a 10-year. But still, what they're doing is saying, if you'd done this 10 years ago, here's what you would have had.
Right, and we'll see what happens in the next 10 years. And we may or may not have inflation over the next 10 years. I think maybe by the end of the decade, or the end of the 10-year time horizon, we may see some inflation. Maybe they'll figure it out by then. But I don't see it happening in the next year or two.
Three. No, and I certainly don't see it happening enough to warrant somebody who's behind the eight ball and is going to retire in 5 years, all of a sudden replacing their bond portfolio, which, by the way, 60-40 mix of bonds is not necessarily what we would recommend anyway. We would recommend some other stuff in there. But replacing that with metals, even if they said it was a metal fund.
Which one? And how much is it allocated to which metal?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Couple more. We'll cover them in a little while. I want to get to some emails, though, and your phone calls. We'll be answering your questions when we come back. Emails at wealthed.com. Phone calls on your phone, 877-PLANNER. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. 877-752-6637. Get on board. We have a couple of lines open right now, and we will take care of those calls here just as quickly as we can. Also, emails. It's wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. So we do want to get some of these as they've been coming in. This came in actually a couple of days ago from Erica in Henderson, Nevada. My parents established a living trust and died in 2007 and 2008, respectively, leaving my brother as the executor. He has since moved the house from their trust into his own living trust, but has agreed to buy out my half of an appraisal of the house and everything in it because he wants to keep the house. What are the tax ramifications of this, and how can I minimize those? From Erica in Henderson.
I'm not too sure. This is where you would want a good CPA to go through this, but I don't see where there would be a tax consideration. The house was never in your name. The house went to your brother. And so in essence, he's sharing the estate. He's taking asset A and he's giving you asset B, presumably from the estate. And the estate inheritance, assuming it's not an IRA that he's giving you or anything like that, it was a tax-free transfer to you. So the fact that the house was never in your name, you're not technically selling the house. He's just splitting the estate with you. So the estate was worth, you know, $1.1 million, and the house was worth $400,000. He took $400,000 of the house. You took $400,000 of other assets. Now, in your minds, he took $200,000 of the house. $200,000 of the house was yours, but it never got transferred to you. It was split basically at the estate level. You didn't get put on title where you own 50% of it, your brother owns 50% of it, and now there's a transaction that shows him giving you $200,000 for your half of the house. That could potentially be a taxable situation if there's a gain from the date of time when the parents passed away. But the fact that it went from the estate to his name and other assets are coming to you to equalize the inheritance doesn't sound like a taxable event to me. Sounds like you're sharing the estate. And unless there's something in I don't know where it would be, that the IRS can come back and say, but your estate said that it had to go to you first, they're never going to look at that, for one thing. It was never your house. You didn't sell the house. You settled the estate.
So I see where you're saying. I guess I hadn't looked at it quite in that way. The house stayed in the parents' trust.
And then moved 100% to the brother's name.
Into the brother's
own living trust. So he took that as his
inheritance. So he took the house as his own.
Right.
Which meant that the half that had gone to the sister in this case.
The half never went to the sister. In essence, he bought the house out from the trust.
Oh, I see what you mean. So he used his own money, gave half to her.
Well, I don't know whatever where the money came from.
Yeah. All right. So he took some money, gave half to her to as she said, buy him out.
To equalize the estate.
Buy her out. And then he just kept the house.
He equalized the estate. Now,
yeah.
Whether or not the IRS looks at it that way, I don't know. That's the way I would present it.
You could try it anyway. All right.
That's the way I'd minimize the taxes on it.
All right, fine. You know, and by the way,
and there's no transaction that will point the IRS to the fact that he bought out her half of the house. It was never her house. She was never on title.
But she still received half of whatever the value of the home was.
Because they shared the estate.
So it's just, in other words, it's almost like getting a cash inheritance is what you're saying.
That's the way I'd look at it. But like I said, I don't know how the IRS is going to look at it.
Well, if the IRS squawks.
But there's no transaction for the IRS to look at to, you know, ring the bell for their eyes to look this way.
That's true. All they would see if they want to look into it was the fact that she had received some cash from the brother.
Right.
Wherever it came from. Doesn't matter. Okay. Well, try that, Erica. And if the IRS squawks or says, then say, well, Professor Rick Plum on the Bucket Strategy Investing Show was the one who answered this question and said I should do this. So why don't you talk to the guy? Nah, don't
bring it on.
Bring it on. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. We're kidding. Okay, Barry has a question. My wife, 63, and on Social Security Disability and Medicare since age 58. When she turns 66, does she have to do anything at Social Security? I am 69, and I'm collecting full retirement. I assume that means he's collecting his benefits.
Yeah, he's already getting his Social Security benefit.
So wife, 63, been doing the disability and Medicare for the last five-plus years, whatever it is.
Right. So is there anything for her to do at 66? No. Yeah, nothing to do. Assuming she stays on the disability benefit, they don't have to requalify her for anything. When she turns 66, nothing happens. She doesn't have to contact Social Security. She doesn't have to do anything. Medicare is still in place, still coming from her work record, same number. The Social Security benefit that she receives continues on, same number. It's just that instead of being called a Social Security disability benefit, it's a retirement benefit. Instead of coming from the disability trust fund, it's coming from the retirement trust fund. The dollar amount doesn't change. Now, any rules that apply to what she can earn when she's working, if she's trying to work and receive a disability benefit, go away because it's no longer a disability benefit. And there are no earnings rules for a retiree that's full retirement age or older. So all it does is change character. And it, you don't have to do, more importantly, she doesn't have to do anything. Just there.
That's just, it's just what they call it. Mm-hmm. The amount is going to still be the same.
Amount's the same.
Or whatever they would have received. It's just now instead of being called a disability benefit, they're calling this a retirement benefit.
Right. Now, she does have an option. She can, if she wants, go in and voluntarily suspend that benefit and let it grow with the delayed retirement credits up until age 70, when it would then kick back in and start again. Mm-hmm. But that, I don't know why she, you know, that would only be if she expects both of you to live a really long time, or that you don't need the money now and her benefit will become or is larger than your benefit or will become larger than your benefit and you expect to one of you to live a long time. There may be some benefit in that, but it's unlikely. But it opens up that option. But does she have to do anything? Nope.
Yeah, now somebody might say, if I'm just going to throw in the mites here, that, well, wait a minute, Bill, I heard you can't file and suspend anymore.
You can file and suspend.
You can file and suspend.
It's just that if you suspend voluntarily after April of this year, anybody who is receiving a benefit from your work record is also suspended. In her case, there's nobody receiving a benefit from her. She's receiving her benefit. Her husband is receiving his benefit. There's nobody receiving a spousal benefit. So this doesn't affect her. The only reason you would suspend, we still have the ability to suspend at 66 and let it grow with the delayed retirement credits. It's just that unlike the old rules where I could suspend my benefit and my wife could still receive a spousal benefit from my work record, if I suspend after April of this year, I suspend everybody's rights to get a benefit from my work record. My work record gets taken off the, you know, basically taken out of service. Nobody can draw off of my work record while I have suspended my benefit. That's different than right now.
Yeah, if you're planning on having somebody take a benefit the old way, you're going to want to do it before the end of April, which means, of course, that you're going to have to be age 66 before the end of April.
I spoke with somebody today that was talking to Social Security about this, and they said that
the idea of suspending the benefit.
They said you could suspend it. He's already 66. But they said, but your wife's going to have to start taking her benefit now. I'm like, wait a minute, she doesn't turn 66 until December of 17. I don't want her to take her benefit now. And he said, well, if you suspend now, like, no, they don't go hand in hand. Two different issues.
This is what
Social Security got it wrong.
This is what they said?
That's what he said they said.
Oh, wow, interesting. Okay. We may have to talk about that on next week's Social Security show. That's an interesting topic. Okay, we got some more coming up, more emails. I'm going to bring up some more of these ways to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio. We'll see if Professor Plum agrees with those. That's all coming up. And your phone calls, 877-PLANNER. It's Buckets Strategy Investing. Got the disco ball going here.
I can just see Rodney Dangerfield dancing to this.
Can you, though?
Yeah.
I really can. The guy actually had some dancing chops, I guess, although it lends itself to comedy, too. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, room on the phone, so call now with your money questions, 877-752-6637. More emails coming up next segment, along with some trivia. If you want to send us an email, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. And if you want to ask the Brain Trust a question in person, there are a couple of different ways you can do that, and it's going to be starting in February. That'll be the first of the spring series of workshops, the Lucia Capital Group Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. Saturday, February 20th is the first one. Yeah, we're about a month away, but make note of it. Make note that we're coming. In fact, what you should do is just go to wealthed.com right now and sign up. It's free, and we'll remind you as we get closer. Sign up to meet the Brain Trust, get your money questions answered, and talk about strategizing for 2016 and beyond. So Las Vegas, Saturday, February 20th. Saturday the 27th, the following weekend, Seattle, Washington. Join the Brain Trust there. Professor Plum and Terry Keyes, you know him well. He frequents that area quite a bit. And then Phoenix, Arizona, Saturday, March 12th. So Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, those are the next three. And there will be more after that going throughout the rest of March and into April as well. Check wealthed.com to find out where and when the Brain Trust will be traveling to a city location near you. Again, wealthed.com. Our phone line's open, 877-PLANNER. Money questions asked and answered right here. So give us a call as we continue here. I'm having fun with this thing. Some ways to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio. Now, we were talking about inflation last hour as a sort of our main topic for the show. This came out of Reuters. We had a lot of fun with Plum because I had mentioned the first one, which was replacing bonds with Treasury inflation-protected securities.
In total.
Apoplectic fits from Professor Plum. Don't do it. Don't change 60% stock, 40% allocation of stocks and bonds to a 60% stock, 40% tips allocation. It doesn't work.
Doesn't mean don't use tips in your portfolio.
No.
Just don't use it as the only bond holding in your portfolio.
Exactly. So don't do that. So the second one was they suggested that you replace bonds with metals.
So take that 40% allocation of bonds and turn it into just a metals fund.
Yes. Yeah, so metals like gold, silver, copper, what'd you say, palladium?
Unobtainium. That's the really expensive stuff.
Yeah, I heard you can't get that at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And whatever else they come up with. Yet another bad idea. So anyway, there are a couple more. I want to take a call or two because I know we got some folks on hold, but I will see what Professor Plum's reaction to this is.
Can they get one that makes sense?
Looking at these, I don't know. I'm not even going to make a judgment one way or another because I don't like to predict which way the professor is going to go either. Let's see. Who is next here? I believe it is Larry. Okay, Larry in Honolulu. Hello, Larry.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well. How can we help you today?
Well, Happy New Year. I just wanted to thank you personally. Last year I called. I was going to buy a little kiosk at a stand in Honolulu. I was debating whether or not, since I retired, to take money out of the 401k this year versus next year, which my income would have increased. And lo and behold, 2 weeks after I took it out, the stock dropped in half. So I'll talk about lucky timing. Without your advice, I would have lost half of that investment.
Well, you're welcome, but it really wasn't me. I just said that do it when you have the money. Rather than trying to eke out a little more return. I had no idea the market was going to... If I had really thought the market was going to crash as much as it has lately,
should
I may have taken some of my own money out.
Oh, my goodness.
But I've got a 10, 15 year... Yeah,
Having fun with the new business. It's working.
Yeah,
well.
I remember all right. That. Just for people who didn't hear that, you bought a kiosk there. How's everything going with that?
It's good. Business is just booming. We've got about 150 dates scheduled for the year at the university here. So I've got all my days pre-planned for the whole year. I know exactly where I'm going to be, how many people are going to show up there. It's just an amazing opportunity, and I'm glad that I didn't lose half my money before I started.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations. I'm glad you're enjoying your next phase of life there. That just tells me that we need to have another seminar out there so we can come and see your business.
Well, come on down. I'll introduce myself. But in the interim, well, as soon as I make some money, I'll need to invest it somewhere. So you'll be my first call again.
No problem.
Well, we appreciate that, Larry.
Congratulations.
Hey, thanks very much. And good luck to you with that business. I do remember that call. He said kiosk. And I do remember saying I didn't remember what your suggestion was at the time.
Well, it was he had money, and he was looking to either do it now, or this was 2015, he called, wait. And my advice was take it out while you have it. You know.
Yeah, and to be clear, I mean, it was lucky timing.
And I was actually dealing more of a, you know, tax planning, half-half, and, you know, just trying to, you know, mix and match the taxes rather than I wasn't trying to time the market in any way, shape, or form because I can't time the market, and nor can anybody else in the
short run. But as you just said, I mean, every once in a while you can get lucky.
Yeah, and that's what happened because it could have easily gone up, too. The stock.
Yeah, but it didn't. So what you got to do is
take credit for what
the iron's hot. You go out, and I want you to write a book. You can get Larry's, you know,
endorsement.
Absolutely, and talk about what a timing genius you are.
Oh yeah.
And by
wrong.
The time everybody figures out that, you know, as it was with everybody else, that it's all bogus, that nobody can time the market.
And I've already made a bunch of money.
You've already hit number one on the bestseller list, and things are fine. That's the way it works.
Then I can fade into obscurity.
That's all right. If you have enough money, you can do that. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Couple of lines open right now. Let's move along let's go next to Brenda in Decatur, Georgia. Hi, Brenda.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I'm 69 years old, and I've got a TSP account, Thrift Savings Plan.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what the federal employees use.
Right. That's their 401k.
And, yes. And I've got about 300 and... $25,000 in that account. I'm going to have to do something with that account before I'm 70 and a half, I think.
Right. When you get to the required minimum distribution age, they make you do something that basically is permanent for the rest of your life.
Yes. And I don't know if I should take out a cash, you know, just take out the cash, have it taxed, and put it in some account somewhere.
Not $325,000 worth, no.
Should I give it to USAA or some other bank to invest? And they charge $100 a month to invest, you know, to manage your investments. Right now I've got 100% of it in stock in government securities.
So you've got it all in the G fund?
Right.
I mean, that's a very safe, low-yielding investment. It's like a fixed annuity. If you wanted, you could roll the whole thing over to an IRA, which means you don't have to pay taxes on it. And then continue taking required minimum distributions starting next year or the following year when you turn 70 and a half. That's not a huge number, but it is something that you do have to live up to and start paying tax on a little bit. I would not take all of it out at once and pay taxes on it all at once. That's a tax nightmare, $325,000. But I would potentially roll it over to an IRA, and you can use that to buy a fixed account. You can use it to buy CDs. You can use it. You can invest it any way you want. How you actually go about paying for it is up to you. $100, so $1,200 a year. That's not the entire expense, too. On $325,000, you know, that is 0.4%. It is not a very large cost if they're managing it with your goals and your needs in mind. My guess is that there are other expenses involved as well, because that's very, very inexpensive to manage a $325,000 portfolio. But I would, between now and, you know, the next couple of months, sit down with a financial advisor. I can recommend somebody to you if you like, or if you like, you go to a bank, and buy a fixed annuity. There's lots of things you can do depending upon what you're trying to accomplish. But I would roll it to an IRA and give yourself lots of options.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, is Social Security, when my income goes up from this, if I pay myself every month off this IRA or whatever, uh-huh. I can, will my Social Security go down because I have additional income?
It will not affect your Social Security in any way, shape, or form, other than it'll affect your tax liability. You'll end up paying some taxes.
Okay.
But if you're getting $1,800 a month from Social Security now, you'll continue to get $1,800 a month from Social Security when you start taking money out of the IRA or the TSP.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like good advice. I appreciate it.
All right, Brenda. If you need some more help, please hang on. And Professor Plum will go over this in a little bit more detail with you. Now, they're charging, just a flat.
That may just be a platform fee. That is not the management fee. Management fees typically are a percentage of the amount invested. It's not just $100 a month. That's probably a platform fee that covers certain things. But then you look at, okay, the management of it is going to be something else. Now, she said she was 100% in the G fund, very secure. It doesn't sound like she needs this money very much. She's a very conservative, very secure investor. She could buy some assets like a fixed annuity or something of that nature that mimics and maybe even does a little bit better than the G fund, and there's no cost to that.
Yeah.
Zero. Okay. Not a zilch.
Okay. As in nothing. Okay. Thanks for the call, Brenda. We got a little bit of room on the phones. We got more emails to get to when we come back. Some trivia as well. We'll tell you what we're doing on this program tomorrow. Fill you in on all of that when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing, the program. Johnny Dean, the host. Professor Rick Plum, the co-host and the answerer of said money questions. You've got money questions. Give us a call with those questions, and we'll answer them for you right here. Very simple process. Easy to get in touch with us. How? 877-PLANNER. That's how you do it on the phone lines. And wealthed.com through the email system. That is our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. We'll get to an email or two in just a couple of moments. But first, coming up tomorrow on this program, I know you like to take notes on these things, and be ready when we come on at 10 Pacific and 1 Eastern time. Roth two-step. We'll be talking about the Roth two-step. Tell you what this is. Good way to get money into your Roth IRA as long as it's allowed by Congress. Now,
see, a year ago, you would not have said that. And I was saying it. You're saying, oh, quiet, Rick.
Well, the only thing that got me thinking was that they cut your Social Security benefits. And so I thought, well, they'll never do that. And yet somehow these folks did.
Folks.
They had the gall, the unmitigated gall to do that. So they could do that. I don't think anything's going to happen in the next year or two. Frankly, election year, they're too focused on getting themselves back into this cushy job.
And that would tend to make people a little upset and maybe not want to vote for some incumbents.
Exactly. So it's like employee performance review time, you know. They tend to work harder and all that stuff. So I have a feeling that's not going to happen. But the Roth two-step, that's a great way if you make too much money that you can't contribute money into the Roth, but you'd like to get it in there. It's a great way to do so. And you can do it through a non-deductible IRA.
Maybe.
You can if you do it right. If certain things fall into place. That's not that difficult. Really?
You just have to look at some other areas.
Exactly. So we'll tell you what some of the pitfalls are, things to look out for. But that'll be coming up on this program tomorrow. It's all about strategy, and that is a nice strategy. As long as they allow us to do it, we're going to keep talking about it because it works very, very well. And it's actually worked very well for the last probably 6 years or so since we've lost the income limit on Roth conversions, and that's what it has to do with.
And that happened in 2010.
Exactly. Okay, trivia for the day before we get to the next email. This is from where? Financial Planning Association tells us this, that 92% of Americans do not include health care expenses in their retirement plan.
Well, I'm on Medicare by the time I retire. Medicare is free, isn't it? Covers everything.
There's
some retirees going, oh my gosh, did he just say that?
It is not. It is not free. Well, I mean,
Medicare Part A is free.
It's,
but
well,
the premium is free, but you still have co-pays, deductibles, and other things.
It could still cost you a couple grand, you know, in a hospital stay or whatever.
True.
Depending on what you have.
The co-pays, the deductibles,
and all the other
things
that you just mentioned. And if you didn't, there's a rule in there, too. If you have an overnight stay in the hospital, if you don't stay for, I think it's 2 midnights, you wind up paying the whole thing, and Medicare won't pay that. That's just something I read. And
I don't know all those rules.
I don't know them either. I just read it fairly recently, and I've got a family member who was going through that. So but not including health care expenses in a retirement plan, How do you do that when you put a bucket strategy together? I mean, you talk about what your needs are, what your goals are, and things like that. How do you figure somebody's? I mean, do you say you're healthy now, but what could you be in 20 years or what?
Well, you start with adding the actual costs that are going to be involved. You know that there's going to be a Medicare Part B premium or Medicare Advantage, sometimes Medicare D, depending on how you go about doing it. You get a supplement plan in there as well. So you have to increase your expenses just for those premiums, which are going to be $250 per person if you know going forward. That's a pretty good sized chunk for a lot of people. So, or maybe more depending upon how well you're doing it. And then you add in an assumed cost for medical expenses over and above, you know, your co-pays, your deductibles and things like that. And a lot of that does have to do with how flush the person is, how they're going to do it, and their health that they've got. You know, a lot of people know when they go into retirement. The reason they're retiring at the time they're retiring is because they're not all that healthy. They know they're already on a lot of different prescriptions. They're seeing the doctors. They're seeing physical therapists. They're seeing all these things. They know what their expenses are, so we can build that in and then add a padding layer to that. And other people are, they don't. My grandmother was one of these individuals who, I mean, with the exception of maybe a couple doctor visits a year just to check up on things, she was never sick. She never went in the hospital for anything, nothing, ever, until she was 93. And then at 93, she fell, broke her hip, and unfortunately,
yeah.
So the last 6 months at that point got a little expensive. But up to that point, her medical expenses were almost nothing.
Now, why do you suppose people would not consider putting health care expenses into their retirement plan, or even thinking about the fact that they're going to have health care issues when they're older?
But I have met and heard a lot of people say, well, I just need to get to Medicare, and then Medicare will take care of the rest, as if there's no cost to Medicare, and that there's Medicare would cover 100%. Both of those are wrong. There is a cost to Medicare, whether it's Medicare Advantage or Medicare Part B.
You're saying beyond the premium, or
that is the premium. There is a most people don't know about the premium.
Well, let's just fill them in very quickly about the premium for those who aren't aware of how it what happens at age 65.
When you sign up for Medicare, Medicare Part A, assuming you have your 40 credits and you're eligible for Medicare, then Medicare Part A, which is the hospital visits, is covered. That's coming out of the Medicare trust. Medicare Part B is doctor visits and other situations like that. That has a premium associated with it. Most people pay a premium of roughly $121 a month right now. And so some people are going to pay more than that if they have a lot of income. So that's just Medicare Part B. Prescription drug, if you want prescription drugs covered, that's Medicare Part D. That's going to cost you $35, $50 a month premium. Sometimes a little bit more, maybe a little less, depending upon the plan you select. There is a Medicare Advantage program, which is a combination generally of Medicare Part B and D. It's actually known as Medicare Part C. And it costs $121 a month for most people. Now, there are some people left over from last year that were receiving it that are paying a little less. Don't worry, they'll catch up to you soon. They're going to be paying the $121 a month or more next year or the year after.
What are they, at $105 still?
$149, yes.
Yeah. And we're talking per person.
Per person, year.
Yeah, this could take a chunk out of your
And that doesn't
retirement.
Cover 100% of everything. You still have deductibles, out-of-pocket expenses. You still have co-pays. So that runs, depending upon the individual, several thousand dollars more a year on top of the premiums you're paying for the Medicare. And for a lot of people, what they do is they use a Medicare supplement plan to try and help cover those out-of-pocket expenses to reduce that and at least get a little bit more control over it so they have a fixed expense.
We're out of time. We may cover some more of this tomorrow. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, that's our phone number. If you want to get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air and talk to Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors across the country from Lucia Capital Group, their phone number, 800-644-1150. I said we're out of time. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. It's Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC.
SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.